The History Show with Moz Duncan.
Good evening. On this week's programme,
De Valera was terrified by the concept of air warfare.
Civilians become a target as the first Zeppelin raid strikes 100 years ago this week. Also,
modern electronic circuitry is based on Boolean logic and Boolean algebra.
The bicentenary of George Boole, leading mathematician and father of the information age. As well as that, on this National Holocaust Memorial Day, we examine the role of local populations in Eastern Europe in slaying Jews during World War II and the body-snatching boom of 19th century Dublin. And that's where we begin this evening.
Back in the days when willing patients were scarce and surgery was mostly guesswork, there was a great demand for bodies to practice on. Some people weren't too fussy about where the bodies came from. Body snatching was a thriving business, but the competition was fierce.
That was a trailer for the 1972 film Burke and Hare. It's based on the true story of two Irish criminals who made a profit by killing people and selling their bodies to medical schools in 19th century Edinburgh. Theirs is, hopefully anyway, a unique case in that they actually committed murder to maintain a steady supply of corpses. During the 18th and 19th century, the practice of body snatching, the secret stealing of dead bodies from their graves, was very, very common indeed. At the time, Dublin was the body-snatching capital of Europe, as corpses were in constant demand by anatomy and surgical schools, where they were essential for medical research and training. And also there was a thriving export trade. We'll talk about all that in a minute. And joining me to talk about this macabre occupation is medical historian Joe Harbison. Joe, you're very welcome indeed. And I think, as far as Dublin is concerned, the story starts with or is very much involved with your own institution where you lecture medical students, Trinity College.
Well, yes. I mean, I think the story and what brought this to light for the programme was last year we had a ceremony in Trinity where we reinterred the remains of over 200 individuals that were found in the foundations of the Berkeley Library when it was being built. And we had a very simple ceremony to allow them to be reinterred in Glasnevin. But that was just the beginning. Anatomy started in Trinity in 1711. But even before then, to become a doctor, Trinity still qualified doctors, you still need to have seen three dissections. So there's probably even dissections going on in private institutions before that. What happened later on in the 19th century is there was a boom in medical schools and a boom in as a result, you needed more and more bodies. And those couldn't be provided by conventional means, that is, the hanged murderers.
Mm. And do you reckon that there might be more bodies in various parts of Trinity College if they start digging?
According to some people, that there were a couple dug up last year that will be reinterred again. If you think in and around Dublin, though, there were at various stages about 20 schools of anatomy and medicine in the early 19th century. So there are bodies probably buried in lots of different places. I heard last year that they'd when they were building the site for the new Mater Hospital, they found a couple of remains under that, and there was an anatomy school on Eccles Street in that stage. Robert Adams, a very famous surgeon, had an anatomy school in Eccles Street, and one would have to suspect that's where the remains came from.
51551 is our text number. Take us right back. What's the earliest reference to body snatching in Dublin?
Well, we have a record back in 1732. There are two references. The first is a grave digger in St Andrew's Church, which is now on Suffolk Street, was arrested for helping people dig up bodies and steal bodies. And the sexton of St James's Church in Dublin was also arrested and then escaped. And he, again, sold the body of an old lady for profit.
Initially, it was the students and the doctors themselves. They actually did the digging up on their own.
I think if you were a student, you were expected to dig up your own body. There's a very gruesome story by Dominic Corrigan, who's a very famous Irish physician, about going out to steal bodies in the middle of the night in the 1820s. I think once you got more senior, if you were a senior anatomist or surgeon, you had the man who did it. You'd had to have somebody who worked for you who would go out and dig up the bodies for you and bring them in, and you'd pay him quite handsomely.
So if you were promoted to professor, you were exempt. exempt from digging up your own bodies.
You didn't have to go out in the middle of the night. No, although the unfortunate Peter Harkin, there was one professor of anatomy in one of the private schools, Peter Harkin, who was caught digging up bodies in 1813 in Bully's Acre. And as he was trying to escape, he let his students out over the wall first, but the guards got him by the legs and the students got him by the arms. An unfortunate tug of war resulted eventually in Harkin's death from internal injuries.
And was it actually illegal to steal a dead body? Or how illegal was it?
It wasn't very illegal. People would be... could be sent to prison for it. But you have to remember there was a considerable doubt who owned a dead body. You can't actually own a dead body. So you could get done for trespassing. You could, if you stole anything else but the body from the coffin, that could, strictly speaking, belong to the next of kin.
So if there were pennies in the eyes and you stole the pennies, you could be sent to jail. But if you stole the body, not necessarily.
You could be sent to prison, but there weren't long prison sentences for it. If the physician was with you and it was doing it, the magistrate understood most of the time that the doctors needed the bodies. And the people who were out stealing it, if they were doing it for a surgeon, the surgeon would tend to look after the family when they were in prison, if they were sent there for 6 months or something for doing that. The fines weren't very big either. The fines were not as much as the body was worth.
Okay, I'm particularly squeamish, so mm-hmm. on behalf of people like me, I'm going to issue a little bit of a health warning in relation to the next question I'm going to ask you, because I know the answer. And what was the most common method for retrieving a freshly buried body?
Okay, this is fairly gruesome. Ideally, you would have somebody at the funeral to watch and make sure there'd be no trap set or there was no particular preparation for that. Then in the middle of the night, you'd go to the grave, usually with a number of you, some people watching guardsmen go with guns. And then you'd dig down to the head of the coffin. Now, the first thing, we have to dispel the myth, bodies were not buried 6 feet under. Even today, I think the law in most cemeteries is that the topmost coffin has to be 2.5 feet down. So they were quite shallowly buried and quite flimsily made. They'd then take the coffin, uncover the top roof of the coffin, and drill a series of holes across the top of the coffin, and then get a crowbar in under it and break it. At that point, then they'd either put down a rope or a bar under the person's neck and pull it out head first. Now, they dug the holes reputedly with wooden shovels to make less sound. They could steal up to 5 or 6 bodies in a night. So it was quite a lucrative operation.
But, I mean, pulling a body by the neck from a coffin must have resulted in a number of decapitations.
Not so much decapitations, but caused a lot of damage. You had complaints from physicians. There's one very eminent Dublin physician called John Chain who complained that he never got decent bodies from the body snatchers because the necks were always destroyed and damaged. And he also complained that the bodies were often dropped over the wall, and as a result, there were spinal injuries and vertebral injuries to the body, so we never got a decent dissection from that.
So where does that leave the bodies of hanged men? Because they were, I suppose, that was a legal mechanism whereby surgeons could actually get bodies for anatomical research. But obviously, if you've been hanged, your neck is not in pretty good nick.
Hanging, the classical way for hanging, as long as it didn't strangle, was a fracture between C1 and C2.
This is another Trinity story, isn't it? The Houghton knot.
Houghton's drop, yes, as opposed to the common drop. Houghton was actually probably anti-capital punishment, but he'd seen too many men strangle. So he worked out mathematically what weight you needed to break somebody's neck with a hanging. So that's the Houghton's calculation of Houghton's drop. There weren't as many hangings around as people thought. There were only about 12 to 15. You're talking about 1780, 1790, 12 or 15 a year. I mean, sometimes it would go up as far as 30, but really there weren't enough to do when you consider how many bodies they actually needed.
And apparently, in the days when the students were doing the job themselves, they were slightly refined, because they used to, to do up the graves then afterwards. They'd refill the hole they'd
create. They would. Personally, you didn't really want to get caught, and next of kin would get upset if they found the grave open the following day. It's much better to try and leave things as you were. By the time you're getting into the 1830s or the early 1830s, late 1820s, and the body snatching gangs, they were less refined. There was a public scandal the way they would leave graves. But at this stage, Dublin is exporting 5,000 to 8,000 bodies a year, according to The Lancet.
Where are they going?
They're going to everywhere, to the UK particularly, to London, to Liverpool. They're often found on the Liverpool docks. They were found, even got as far as Edinburgh. They were exported by the body-snatching gangs in crates marked Irish cheddar, occasionally in piano cases.
Because there'd be a bit of a hunk
of them.
They'd
be a bit smelly, yeah.
I've had to explain that. And there were gangs, and there were rival gangs, and they, in the way that drugs gangs do nowadays, they fought amongst themselves.
They did. It was we talk about it. If you talk about a soldier in Wellington's army, his annual pay after expenses would have been £3.33 shillings and threepence, the three threes. A good cadaver, Burke and Hare in 1828 were being paid between £8 and £10 per body. And even in 1830, there was agrarian revolt almost in the UK, where they wanted a minimum wage of 15 shillings a week for summer work for a labourer. With the same shovel, you could go dig up a body and make 2.5 months pay in the space of a night. The gangs, therefore, became very organised. There were three gangs in Dublin that we know of. One was led by a man called Collins, who lived on Peter Street, another by a guy called Daly, who lived on Dalier Street, and the third and most legendary or most sinister was led by a Scottish half-pay army surgeon by the name of Wilson Ray, and he lived down towards Inchicore, and he was the most sinister because he did a lot of the exporting.
And did they have their own patches? And did you dare not invade another gang's patch?
I don't think so. I think there was competition.
Because there were only a certain number of cemeteries, obviously.
I think there was quite heavy competition. They may have had their own favourite areas. The big place to steal bodies from, of course, was Bully's Acre, which is now down by the Royal Hospital Donnybrook. Royal Hospital Kilmainham. That was the poor graves and had been the poor graves for 1,000 years, probably. It's called Bully's Acre, but it's actually close to 4 acres. And even now it's much smaller than it was because the Euston station was built on top of part of it. But those were the poor graves. The graves were shallow. The coffins were poor. People very often had to bury their own there. And those were the easiest to probably access. The downside of raiding Bully's Acre was it was right beside the Royal Hospital, which meant there were sentries. And the sentries were probably not above taking the odd pot shot at somebody if they saw them in the middle of the night. Certainly they arrested quite a number of them.
And the reason why a prodigious number of bodies were required, between 600 to 800 for these schools to stay in operation. It was a preservation issue, really, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, you got complaints from physicians that some of the bodies they got were a little bit old. They liked them fresh, but the body was probably okay for about 10 days to 2 weeks maximum before it was unusable. And therefore, they would have to replace them very often. So the medical schools in Dublin alone needed between 500 and 600 bodies a year.
Tell us about some of the steps that people took to prevent body snatching.
In Ireland, well, the first thing you would have is a grave watcher. If you were wealthy enough, you could pay to have somebody sit and watch your grave. Sometimes relatives would do that. In 1819, a charitable society in Dublin wanted to set up a volunteer grave watching scheme, and the medical profession objected. And one of the complaints they had was that the practice of medicine and teaching medicine in Dublin raised about £70,000 a year, and that was something they couldn't afford to lose. If that didn't work, the easiest thing which was done in Dublin and Ireland was to put in what's called a mort stone, just a very big slab. And you can see these in a lot of early 19th century cemeteries in Dublin, or early 19th century tombs, where these very big, several ton slabs are put on top of the grave. Sometimes two. Sometimes they'd bury a hole, put a slab in, cover it over, and put another slab on top of that. If that didn't work, they occasionally used things called mort safes, which were cages you could put over the top of the grave. There's one of those in Drumcondra. Or they could put in spiky railings in and around the tomb. Finally, if that didn't work, you could delay burying the body, and they'd have what's called a mort house, where they'd leave the coffin for a few days before they'd bury it to allow it to become unsuitable for dissection. The Prospect Cemetery, which is now Glasnevin Cemetery, had, of course, the special mechanisms of guardhouses and Cuban bloodhounds and armed guards.
Because Glasnevin was very well protected. I know, for example, that Michael Moore in Zosimus had an obsession with having his grave robbed, and he wanted to be buried in Glasnevin because there was a good chance he wouldn't have his body snatched.
He would probably had a remembrance of body snatching. He died about 1846, I think, and that's a bit after body snatches. There was a little bit of body snatching went on, but the Anatomy Act had been introduced in 1832, which made it illegal to be in possession of a body without a license, and that body had to be donated. You'd have to have the documentation with it, and there was a three-month penalty for being found in possession of a body. So that really killed the body snatching industry.
Somebody has a question here to 51551, our text number. Where have the bodies they reinterred last year been buried? They're in Glasnevin, aren't they?
They're buried in Glasnevin, which I think is appropriate, really.
Yeah, they should have been buried there in the first place. Maybe they were buried there in the first place, but possibly elsewhere. Burke and Hare, tell us a little bit about Burke and Hare, even though they're not, they are Irish, but they did their dirty work.
Burke and Hare, one was from Strabán and the other was from Newry, and Burke and Hare worked or provided bodies for a very eminent Scottish anatomist called Dr. Robert Knox, William Burke and William Hare, and they killed about 17 people in the mid to late 1820s, usually by smothering. Knox, although he was cleared of having any involvement, clearly wasn't very picky about where he got his bodies from. There was shown by the case of one called Daft Jamie. He was a mentally disabled chap who all the students in the medical school knew, and whose body was smothered and the body delivered to Knox, and Knox defaced the corpse to make sure nobody could recognise it. They were caught in 1828 when one of the bodies was found under the bed of their lodgings before they could deliver it to Knox. And Burke, although there wasn't a lot of evidence, Hare turned King's evidence and Burke was hanged for it. And thus came the little children's rhyme, Burke's the butcher, Hare's the thief, and Knox is the boy who bought the beef.
And there was actually a word called birking.
Birking.
What did birking mean?
Birking is to kill somebody for the purposes of selling their body for anatomy. And birking, the process of birking, was one of the things that brought about the Anatomy Act, fear of birking. You had the Burke and Hare murders, but then just after Burke and Hare murders, you had what's called the London Birking murders, where another six were killed in London by being lowered feet first into a well to drown and then being sold to anatomists. That and the organised anatomy gangs and the trade in human bodies caused so much outrage that, well, two things, for example, there was public outrage, but also actually the medical schools were struggling to get bodies. They couldn't compete with the gangs. The gangs would buy off their own people for stealing bodies so they can make a better offer. And therefore, the anatomy schools started to struggle to get bodies because they were all being exported.
Now, the thing about a hanged man essentially had no right to to the disposal of his own body.
Not if he was hanged for murder.
If he was hanged for murder. And but some people who were condemned to be hanged apparently were selling their own bodies before they went to the gallows.
Yes. They'd sell their body to fund the wake. So they'd make an agreement in advance with a physician to they sell their body in that intent. There was one case actually with William Petty, and this is back in the 18th century, where they actually managed to resuscitate the person who was hanged. When they got the body, they discovered the person was still alive and therefore resuscitated them.
Right, somebody has texted in to say that there's a hill in the Ivy Gardens in Dublin with trees growing on it. It's known as the Elephant's Graveyard because this is where UCD veterinary students disposed of elephant carcasses after they were finished with them. This is when the college was based in front of the Ivy Gardens on Earlsford Terrace. Apparently they got dead elephants from the zoo. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Yes, we were actually, one of the things that we've turned up in Trinity, in the anatomy department of Trinity, the old anatomy department, is several remains of several different types of animals. We've had an elephant skeleton or part of an elephant skeleton. We even found an orangutan, bizarrely enough, donated by the zoo when they died for comparative anatomy.
Well, thank you very much indeed for a very macabre 20 minutes or so indeed. Joe Harbison, thanks very much indeed for joining us this evening.